All right, welcome back to the Just Mets podcast. I am your host, Rich McLeod. We are back with a special bonus episode this week. Joining me as a guest I'm very excited to chat with. He is a 10-year MLB veteran. You probably remember him as the Mets setup man from 2021 to 2022. He also hosts the Mayday podcast now. Trevor May, how you doing, my man?
Doing good. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So, the Mets are having a very interesting season. Thought, why not have a former Met on to talk about it? And before we kind of get into the specifics of what's been going on with this team, just kind of want to know, you know, what your thoughts have been just as kind of like an outside perspective viewer this season. You know, they had the best record in baseball till about mid-June. And then since then, you know, bottom 10 record in baseball. Their pitching has had a lot of issues. That's been like the main issue recently. They have been playing a little bit better. But yeah, you know, they're in a dogfight for that last wild card spot now in the National League. So what are your thoughts on this year's Mets?
There's a ton of potential there. I think the starting pitching was going to be a big question mark to start the season. I think there was a pleasant surprise with how Tyler McGill started and Griffin Canning and you know, all the production we got out of those guys. But, there was a lot of things going their way in the first half. I did a little breakdown of this and where they were, and like total base runners and things was always very low in the league. And they were kind of just stranding people, like a lot of runners. And that has come back to bite them a little bit. That and some injuries, you know, Sean Manaea not quite being what he was last year yet. I think that he is getting better or more and more sharp every time he goes back out there. But that was always going to be a little question mark for them. The one thing I thought they did well at the deadline that hasn't kind of played out as much is going grabbing bullpen pieces and making that a really deep bullpen. We've had some guys really struggle in a way that we've never seen anyone struggle before. I'm sure we'll talk about that. But the offense has been pretty steady. Honestly, the offense is a top eight offense in most categories for the entire second half. They've been doing a good job. Also hitting much, much better with runners scoring possession. We're not really talking about that as much because it wasn't translating into wins. But the pitching has been the big issue. That said, there's a couple young guys up. I know that Sproat is on his way too. There's some hope. I know that with lack of experience, it's hard to hang your hat on that. But like, I mean, if the playoffs started right now and you had to start a series, I mean, Nolan McLean is your day game one. Like you throw him game one at this point.
Yeah.
And then you have David Peterson. You know, he's had a couple clunkers, you know, more recently, but he has been the most consistent arm out there. And then you have Manaea with all the experience and still getting better. So like, I still think there is a path. I think that to a path to make a really long run, and that they have been inconsistent, but I think that the better team is going, that's what we're going to see at the end of September, or at least I'm hopeful for.
Yeah. You kind of touched on it, you know, baseball has a funny way of sometimes, you know, regressing to the mean or progressing to the mean in what, like epic ways. So they maybe overachieved, especially pitching wise, those first couple months. And this is just baseball's weird way of like evening it out by the end of the season. It's just been kind of intense the last couple of months. But you know, there's another aspect of it, and I'm curious your perspective. You were, you know, you've played on some playoff teams. You were obviously playing in New York for a couple of years on some pretty high profile teams with the Mets. That 2021 team kind of had like a weird season where it got off to an unexpectedly good start and then kind of like fell apart in the second half. And then 2022, you guys were basically a machine until those last like weekend or two of the season when things flipped in just those couple series against the Braves and the Padres. You know, this season with the Mets, obviously very, very highly anticipated, probably their highest expectations going into a season in franchise history, just because coming off making the NLCS last year, you sign Soto, you bring Pete back, you get a couple of these other pieces on the roster. As a former player and a player who's been here with some of these guys, you know, how much do you think that pressure of expectations actually impacts this team? Is that more of something that like fans and the media focus on way more than the players, or does it actually have an impact?
Oh, it definitely has an impact. It feels different. It's funny that media and fans have feelings about it, but I mean, that's where it's coming from. So like those expectations, they have an effect, but like, that's not a bad thing. Like that, I feel like that's just how it is when there's that many people that like your team. Like, and you know, there's been a pretty big drought here since the last World Series. Like, that's what happens. I played Minnesota. They're having the same thing. We had the thing with the Yankees. We couldn't beat them. Like, right. It's just they're obviously a little bit a different area, different mindsets. But, like, you could still feel it there as well. It's just really intense in New York City. New York City expects excellence. It always has. That is a big part of the identity of the city in general about everything, which is good. And that kind of that makes people kind of rise to the occasion. You get heroes. So, like, it's one of those things. Like, if you win there, they'll love you forever. That there is no, that is not truer anywhere more than New York. So all of that said, when things start going poorly, stopping that skid can be like pulling the e-brake could be a little harder, maybe there than another place. If you like think like, oh, no one saw that, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone sees everything. Like every little right. thing that could possibly lead to a negative result is seen. Someone's going to see it. You can't hide anything. And just knowing that, you know, feels a little bit more of a microscope, even if it's not really happening. So. It is a unique place to deal, like a new unique place to play and a unique set of difficult or obstacles to deal with sometimes. But if everything's good, there is no better place. So like it's just a trade-off. And I think that's why there's certain guys who were built to do that. And some guy, it can be a culture shock, but I think that given the chance that most people will take that chance to see what type of person they are. So yeah, I've done a lot of thinking about this subject. But I think that the team there, like I think Francisco Lindor like loves it. Like that's exactly what he wants. He wants to absorb all of that and process it in his way and be a leader of a team like that. He very much operates like Jeter did over on the other side. Like that's the way he acts and goes about his business. So it's just unique in that way. But I'll tell you one thing, 2022, man, was the most fun I ever had playing professional baseball. That was a blast. Being that excited every day with everybody. So I can't wait to see it. I cannot wait to see it happen. Not as much as you guys, I'm sure, but I will be right there with you. Trust me.
Totally. I mean, I'm sure, you know, whether you're a part of a team for a decade or even a couple of years, like I think a piece of that team probably still like lives in you. Right. And you're rooting for them the rest of the way, unless you had some kind of like, bad ending, which I don't think that you did. You know, and you were talking about, you know, the microscope. And I mean, for God's sake, this is a place that was analyzing Juan Soto facial expressions early in the year and being like, oh, is he happy? And you had the Michael Kays of the world saying whatever they wanted to say, because at the time they could get away with it. Maybe not so much now. And you were talking about Lindor as well. You know, you got to play with him, and you also got to play with him in his first year with the Mets and then his second, which were very different in terms of just one, how the team did, but also how he did. You know, he got off to that rocky start. We kind of see this trend of like the big guys that the Mets acquire, they don't always get off to the best starts. You had Lindor, you had Beltran, even Soto for the first couple months this year. I don't want to relitigate some of like the weirdness from 2021 with a rat and a raccoon or whatever that thing was. But he did seem like he personally grew a lot between those two seasons. And in 2022 really started to become that like face of the Mets leader. And obviously the result on the field for everybody, not just him, was huge. So what was that like for you just witnessing, you know, the Lindor 2021 kind of getting his feet wet in New York and then in 2022?
Yeah, it was stark. We all noticed because especially in 2021, he was like, I mean, he took the leader mantle the moment he got to the big leagues, but he was in Cleveland. Like there right. is, it's just a different, like, again, so the way I think about it is there's some fan bases when the team starts to not play as well, they just kind of like tune out. Mets fans don't tune out. They tune in. Like more people watching when things aren't going well. Cause so like that's, I think that's kind of what Mets fans will never go to like, I'm indifferent about my team. That's just not an option. And that's an option in other places. Like there's other things that you know, like they have another team or something, right? There's something else, other sport. So that he realized that. I think that's the thing he realized. He's like, oh, like being on all the time, like I have to protect, like, I also have to protect myself a little bit too. Just be like, hey, you know, like, just stay calm when everyone else is upset. Because if you try to ride that wave, it's going to affect you just energy wise, because it's hard enough to play this game every day. And I think he was asked to do a whole lot of like talking in front of the media. You know, Luis Rojas is one of my favorite human beings on the planet, but that's his personality is not one to kind of run interference. That's like that's not the way that he is. Buck Showalter, very different. Love to misdirect and, you know, knock comments aside and stuff like that. But he'd been a New York manager before. So it's just, so Francisco felt like, oh, I can help with that. And that turned out to not be the best way to go about things. And I saw him kind of make the decision like, maybe not. And things changed. And then he got to focus on just the clubhouse. And when that happened, then it really dialed in. So I think he just like me, I kind of got like, whoa. Like, you know, I'm an emotional guy. I operate on a very high frequency sometimes. And that if I try to match people all the time, like, it doesn't work for me. And I had to learn too. And I didn't handle it near as well as he did. I also wasn't the leader of the team. And I wasn't being paid that much, but as much as him, but that is definitely what I saw. And then adding Max Scherzer, I think that helped as well. Like, having him handle the pitchers and Francisco had we had two really good leaders, and that was really important for winning the way we did that year. So, but now Francisco, like, now it's butter. Like, he's been playing with a broken foot all year. I think we forget that fracturing your foot and just taping the crap out of it every day isn't fun. Like, it's not like you're out there springing around, and he's still playing gold glove defense. I know the bat's not quite what it was, but he's still getting his big hits and doing his work. And he's heating up when it matters. And Soto has quietly had almost one of his best offensive production seasons, which is hilarious for me to think about because of what the narrative was in the first couple months.
Yeah, we went through all that just for him to be like probably the runner-up for MVP in the National League if he keeps up at this point.
Is he still leading the second half, the whole league, in stolen bases?
Yeah.
Juan Soto?
It's like till like June or May, I think he's well ahead. It's insane. I mean, he's going to have a 40-30 year probably, which who in their right mind ever saw that coming, especially after how he started the year. It's been it's been pretty crazy. And, you know, a lot of people, you know, there's narratives, there's personal narratives, things that people want to be right. You know, they're like, oh, this guy's not trying. This guy
that happens
not a leader, which is... It always happens. It's sometimes I think it's a little bit charged just based on like the way like guys' facial expressions are. Like Soto's just like a quiet dude. He's not super expressive all the time, but it's, you know, I remind people like, yes, it's frustrating, all that sort of thing. But the guy was in a World Series when he was a rookie. He was their best player. He was in a World Series last year in New York in his first year. It's like he can handle it. It's just he's adjusting.
The funny thing is, like, that was I know how it looked, but in reality, he was just like, talk to me in a couple months. He's like, I know I'm being flippant, but like, I'm just not going to get upset. Like, you guys are going to get upset because I know it's going to be fine. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be fine. And trust me, it's going to be fine. It's always fine. And it was fine. And it's fine. Not only is it fine, it's good. The offense is very good. It's a very good offense. Very good.
Yeah. A down Soto year, which I don't even think you could say that anymore, but just for the sake of it, is better than like 98% of MLB players' like best seasons ever. Exactly. Yeah, that's how good this dude. And he's 26 years old. Like, he's not even technically in his prime yet, which is insane to say. One last thing on the pressure, because you kind of mentioned the spiral of it, and I think sometimes from like the fan perspective, when things go wrong, especially with the pitching, which I think we're going to get into in a second, it almost feels like it's like contagious, like it's that snowballing effect. When you are a player in the locker room and maybe you or yourself are kind of feeling that, like, oh man, we've lost 14 out of 16, like they did at one point earlier in August. How do you, as an individual player and then as like a collective team, try to get out of that? You know, do you have to actually block out that noise and not focus so much on it? Do you have to dial in a different way? You know, like sometimes overly focusing on that could almost maybe make you press and make it worse. So I'm curious what that's usually like.
that it is a, it's a fine line because you have 26 guys all doing all in their own thing, right? Mm-hmm. All trying to accomplish their own things, and all at different places. Some guys might be slumping, some guys might be raking, some guys might be pitching well, some guys aren't. And getting everyone confident that they can be the guy that steps up is the when you get in these runs of good baseball. And so the opposite is true when it's not going well. So I know that there's a big struggle, and I the big thing is watching Aaron Boone deal with it like a month ago was just like he knows everyone says, hey, we just got to stick to the keep sticking the plan. It's just grind out. It's just a collection of moments. Take care of your moment and go from there. And just people don't want to hear that. Right. Like, we know, no, it's got to be something else. But sometimes you're just not playing that well at all at the same time. And it could be bad timing, but that's kind of what it is. Because the same thing happens for when you're playing well, right? So how do you get there? You have to make everyone believe that when their moment comes and if it's their job to do, that they can do it. And because that's the only thing you can control. And then try to take care of it when he gets there. So, but if you believe you have a better chance. That's what's happening in the clubhouse. That's how you keep your morale up, because I've been on bad teams that don't address it, and then you just are bad, and then nobody cares. You try to get everyone to stop caring and get off your back a little bit, like I mentioned in the smaller markets sometimes. And those clubhouses are miserable. It's almost a race to the exit after the game ends, and that's not fun. So whatever happens, you don't know. You don't want that to happen.
Yeah. I do feel for the managers sometimes of, you know, they have to be the face of it, just speaking to the media before and after every game. And when they're going through these struggles, like, you can only say so many times, like, we're not playing well, and you're not going to kill the guys to the camera. And I know fans don't like that, but it's, you know, there's only so much you can say. Like, what's Mendoza going to say? Like, Kodai Senga is terrible. Like, get him out of here. Like, he's,
does everyone can't feel say better?
That. Like, he's going to, yeah, he's going to, it might make you feel better for 5 seconds, but then Kodai Senga is not going to talk to him for the rest of the season. You have a whole
and he issue. Might suck more because he thinks his manager doesn't think he's good. And then does anyone win there? No.
If you're, you know, my main job is marketing. If my boss told me like I was doing a shitty job, I don't think I'd do better. I think I'd probably be worried and focused on that I'm not doing a good job. And now this person's opinion of me that I respect is not a good one. So that's really not doing anybody any favors. But, you know, speaking of the pitching, you know, we talked about a little bit up top, but the Mets are in this weird situation right now where, you know, half of the rotation right now is rookies with no experience. You know, you've got McLain, he's made 4 starts. He's been awesome. Tong's just made the 1, and then Sprott's coming up this weekend. And if you asked me a month and a half ago, I don't know that I would have thought maybe anybody but one of them would have gotten called up. I think all 3 of them have probably been called up out of necessity here, because you've kind of had this, I don't want to say unprecedented level of struggles, but with the veterans right now, I think there's so much that's going wrong. And with each individual, there's something different happening, right? Where you have Peterson, I still have trust in. I just think with him, you know, he's well past his career high in innings. Like, that's going to have an effect. And he's been throwing the most innings of any of them for most of the season. Holmes, you know, he's a converted reliever. He's in his 30s. He's way, way past any amount of innings he's ever pitched. And then you've got Manaea and Senga, who are coming off the injuries and just not adjusting very well. You know, what do you think is going on with these veteran starters? Is it just like 4 different set of circumstances and it's just bad luck that it's all happening at once? Are there things that, you know, Jeremy Hefner can do, or could, again, is it just like that thing of like, you can only tell people to do things so many times, they actually have to be able to physically do it?
It's that last part. I mean, there's some things, we're getting to the point of the year, they call it the dog days of summer for a reason. Like, the older you get, the less fresh you feel every day. It's just, that's it. Like, you're just like nursing things. You're just trying to maintain yourself. You're just trying to get some more energy places. You're just trying to get an extra day here and there. Like, when that's, when your body, if your brain's out there like, hey, let's do this thing, and your body's like, maybe a little, we can do half of that. Like, the confidence doesn't go up. So that's kind of what we're dealing with right now. I don't think anyone feels truly dialed in except for the young guys. I just spoke about this on my show yesterday, talking in depth about like, how important it is to have the McLeans and have the Tonals come up for your team at this point in the season and have success, because they just been playing six games, getting a day off all season. And I'll say it. I know Triple A does not matter and Double A does not matter. And you feel that way. You're like, this game doesn't matter. There's some guys that know they're not going to play that day and they don't know what the score is when the game's over. And because it's exhausting to constantly be dialed in, but in the big leagues, you are under a microscope, especially in New York. And so every game does feel like really, really, really important. Because they are, but like in terms of your, like you have to play well all the time, and that can be just daunting at times. So getting young guys with some excitement, they're there, they don't need energy because they're young, and also they're in the big leagues for the first time, and then they have success right away. Sometimes the veteran guys need to just kind of like, all right, hop behind them, ride in their wake for a week or two to get them a blow. And hopefully David Peterson looks at Nolan McLean and says, thank you, bud. You're taking the, like, because I needed to be the guy, go out and throw six. You throwing well is giving me a little bit of breathing room here to maybe get going again, right? So yeah, that is important. And you also can get energy from these guys and feed off them. So they have young guys giving them energy and throwing well. And that is, I mean, I know it's pitcher, but like it was Vientos last year, right? He was the young guy. Like he didn't need to get energized. He was having a blast and everyone followed him. Iglesias, like guys were just feeding off his energy. So it's like that is what you need at this point of the year. And in the pitching staff, thank God the young guys are pitchers, because the pitching staff is the ones that need to feed off this energy. So I'm looking forward maybe 10 days, 14 days that some guys will have gotten some solid starts under their belts, some good rest, or you know, gotten to a situation where they struggled recently and then they get out of it. And there's a switch that flips, because they've done it before. All these guys have had success. That's what I'm looking for. If you get a couple of those, a couple of guys get a little bit back on track for the playoffs, you'll be in good shape.
Do you think that, you know, that energy can be kind of, you know, contagious when they come into the room? Is it just like it's been the same guys for a while? Maybe everybody's kind of emotionally going through the motions. Is it just like a presence of like a new person who's young and a different energy can kind of just like change the chemistry of the entire room?
Yeah, absolutely. It happens at the trade deadline too. Like I know this didn't work out as well, but like when we got Javi Baez, we're like, we just want to hug this. Thank God. Like a guy who plays with, you know, his stuff. I'm like, we need that, because that's been a criticism of us that we don't have that. And so it was great to have him around. He was just like, I don't deal with all this stuff. I just go play. And we needed that perspective, an outside perspective a little bit. So we fed on that a little bit. I know it didn't end up like coming out to be anything, but it was a boost. We did get a boost for a minute there. Yes, that is a real thing. When you see reinforcements coming, when you're just dog tired, no matter how well you've played, you're like, just give me just like a little bit of a break, because it's 162 games. That is too many. It's just too many games. It's too many. Let's get those two teams in expansion. Let's make this 154.
Just out of curiosity, conversely, you know, in a season, I'm not going to throw anybody under the bus here, but 2022, you know, that team was so good that entire season up until the end. And, you know, the trade deadline that year, the front office didn't really do too much. They added like a couple more ancillary, like bench type pieces. Can that sometimes be like a letdown for a group of guys who's like, hey, like we're playing our asses off here, and you didn't invest that much more in us? Or like, are you not really focusing on it that much at that point?
We're not really focusing on it too much. And it really comes down to, like, I'll be honest, in clubhouses, like we know what guys would be that make a ton of sense. If there's a guy that's like a no brainer and they don't get the job done, like I'm in Seattle. So all the fans here were like, if we don't get, Suarez back,
right,
we are actively blowing it. And not only did they get him, they got Naylor. I'm like, that's the two best, like, no two guys at a deadline have fit better onto a team than those two. Like, that was exactly what they needed, two guys at the corners that can hit and have some pop. And that's been their biggest gap. So that's an example of that being perfect. But had they not gotten They love Suarez here. So, like, that was, he was the one they were focused. They didn't really even think about Naylor, frankly. That was a surprise.
Right.
So, if they didn't get Suarez, though, like, they somehow didn't get the deal done, they would have crucified DePoto. Like, it would run him out of town. I mean, it wouldn't have worked, but they would have tried. So, it's that type of stuff that the players might be like, come on, man.
Yeah. Or,
I mean, same thing, same team. When they traded Seawald away, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Can rub you the wrong way. I remember Cal Raleigh saying something publicly and then having to backtrack, which also just drives me crazy. But
yeah,
those are the types of things. But when you like go get, I mean, we got Danny V and we got Naquin and
Ruff.
Like, we love those guys.
Yeah.
And Ruff, like great teammates, great people. Like, and we knew it was like platoon situation. It was like a DH situation, and they knew the deal. So like we all kind of knew like that's what you guys do, and that's kind of what we need to help. We're a pretty deep team. Like we know. And so we didn't have any issue. And all, honestly, you add Danny Vogel back to any clubhouse, it is a better clubhouse.
Yeah. He did seem like a fun guy, even though
he's a great guy.
Yeah. So Mets fans ire, but it is what it is. You know, speaking of trade deadline guys, it's kind of like the last thing I want to touch on before we wrap up. Ryan Helsley is one of the most unique. He's in one of the most unique situations I think I've seen. We've seen guys who come to change teams or come to New York and struggle. We've seen guys struggle with pitch tipping before. I don't know that I've seen it quite this dramatic, though, of basically the second he got here. And, you know, he wasn't having his best season in St. Louis, but like an ERA of 3, his FIP was like 3.5. Like, he was still more than solid. And, you know, he comes to New York and pretty much from the get-go, he's just kind of getting bombed constantly. And they start talking about the pitch tipping and he's made some adjustments. I actually have some video we'll pull up in a second where, you know, his hand placement's moving. He's trying, but it just doesn't seem to be working right now. He had an appearance on Monday against Detroit where he threw 5 pitches. They put 4 in play. They took one of them and he was out of the game after 5. I've never seen a guy make 5 pitches and come out of the game post 3 batter minimum rule. It was kind of amazing where
I almost did it once.
That's pretty
in New
impressive.
York. I think I threw 8.
Yeah. And well, you win, I guess, or Helsley wins, I guess. And if he's the winner in that situation, but you know, it's in that situation and they had already talked about the pitch tipping. You're like, man, these guys must know where, what's coming every single time. And, you know, they're not even really swinging and missing right now. You know, before we kind of pull up some of the videos, what do you just think? You've talked about pitch tipping before on your channel. What do you think is going on here?
Well, it's interesting you would ask me that question right now, because right before I came on here, I'm finishing up a video about how Ryan Helsley's tipping. So he definitely is, right? And I think it was picked up in Milwaukee, and I think Milwaukee had it, and there is I think it's related to tension. So I think that he has operated in a pretty relaxed way, but lately, you know, it only takes like struggling once or twice or getting hit around a little bit to get a little bit more like rigid when you throw. And he's a guy who puts his hands up by his head, like out in space. They're out by themselves. If you are tipping and that's where you hold your hands, if it's something to do with that, that is it's going to be like fireworks going off, because hitters don't see necessarily as much. They're not like the glove moving is what is kicking them off, but it's how it affects the negative space around the glove. So like if you squeeze your glove too tight, they're seeing more space between you and the body, not the glove squeezing, because that's the smaller thing. And that is what he was doing. That combined with, so basically what he says, and I know this was in an article by DeComo, but he says that when he came set on his fastball and slider, that his angle of his hands would change, or his arms would change, like the both arms are parallel to each other and they would go forward or backwards. But what I was seeing, and that is true, but what I was seeing is it was happening because of how he was gripping in the glove. So he would go parallel and squeeze a little bit more on the fastball, and then he was more fanned on the chain or on the breaking balls, both of them, the curveball and the slider. He does the same thing. And over time, it was getting more, the more he was struggling, the more he was squeezing when he went to throw the fastball. So this, like, as he started, he would close it even more and more and more. I'm like, oh my God, every outing, this is getting worse. So, and then he was more relaxed in the slider. So I'm like, the discrepancy between these two pitches is getting more obvious. So I think the Brewers, they got him. I think he blew a hold there a couple weeks ago.
Yep.
And they know him because he was in their division. And then I think when you start to struggle a little bit, you don't know what's going on, then you lose confidence. So then he started to baby some stuff. He threw some like random 96 mile an hour fastballs in there. He threw a curveball like 78 once to Cal Raleigh. I was like, what was that?
Right.
And so he's like, I don't know what they know and what they don't know. I don't know what's going on. Lizardo has struggled with this year where he's like, I think I'm tipping. I don't know what it is. And so now I have no confidence in the strike zone. I just want to throw balls because they're going to hit it if I throw it in the zone. So what was very obvious to me there is, and people are going to go look, and I want you to do this too after, there's two outings where it's very clear someone's got it, and it's the Braves. And it's, of all people, Marcell Ozuna, and he walked him both times. So Marcell Ozuna is not a good matchup for Helsley should own him because of the nature of the way he throws it. It's just not the type of guy he wants to face. Hard fastballs up, doesn't handle those, and deep sliders, not good. So what he was doing is like just fighting stuff off and then not chasing. And Marcell Ozuna chases. Like, he loves chasing. So why are you not chasing? Why are you taking sliders like that? I've never seen anything like that. And then Albies also had it. And Albies got him both times. Hit him weird pitches too. Like, fastballs down. One was off the wall and it was like 4 inches below the zone at 99. Like, Ryan Helsley doesn't give up swings like this.
Right.
And so, and this was, it was on August 14th. And then 8 days later, they faced him again. And they still knew. And the first pitch he throws of the inning to Ozuna, you can tell Ozuna's like, is he still tipping? Mm-hmm. He takes two pitches and he's like, yeah, I still got it. And then he got walked again because he actually swung out of his shoes at the fastballs and then just took the sliders. And then Albies got a fastball down and in, pulled at 100 and hit it off the wall again. And then that's when the comment, he told Steve Cohen, he said, Albies hit that ball. I was like, I tipped that. That was tipped. So then they went and looked. Half as good at this. I did it with him too when I was there. He got a tip with me. So we did the same thing. We pinned our hands to our body. And the next day I pitched against the same team and punched out the side instead of giving up two home runs. So hopefully it helps, but it does look, I watched the outing where he struggled against the Tigers. He looked uncomfortable. Like, it looked like he's used to his hands being out here. He's like trying to break his hands and they were close.
Right.
To him. So his arm was like shorter. So he's like, now I can't throw a strike. So
it must be harder, right? If you've made your whole career, you're pitching with your hands up here. Suddenly you're putting them in your chest and you've never done that before.
Really different. Yeah.
That's like, I mean, these guys are creatures of habit. So like, I can imagine having issues with just like placing the ball or feeling confident. You know, in this last outing against the Tigers on Wednesday, a lot of his sliders I just felt were like uncompetitive, like out of the zone. And I think maybe that had a lot to do with it. It's like he's throwing in a way he's never thrown before.
There was a fastball. Kind
of an impact.
There's a fastball he threw like 97. And I was like,
yeah. And I think I think after he gave up the home run, which we're seeing on the screen now is the home run off the fastball, he did throw like a random curveball in, and the broadcast themselves were very surprised about it. But it's interesting. If you go back to August 1st, this is his first appearance with the Mets. You can see this is his normal motion. And here, I know this is not like the greatest angle, especially because the hitters are seeing it the absolute opposite way, but we have this fastball on the left, the slider on the right. It, just from this hand placement, like, are you seeing anything majorly
not really
different but here?
You can see on the right his hand angle when he was set is slightly like more sideways. The other one's more vertical. That's not huge though. The glove might be a little bit away. It's when he goes to throw. So if you play again, see how he squeezes the glove on the left. See how his glove's more closed? That's what they're seeing.
You can see like the tiniest.
It's closer to his body and it's
light.
It's tighter.
On the inside of his hand, too.
Exactly.
On the slider. And so they can tell just from that little thing.
This space between the glove. Mm-hmm. If this goes from here to here, that is a lot.
That is fascinating.
It might go from seeing light to seeing no light, like because of the angle. And it's funny. The guy he's facing right there, he absolutely dominates.
The first guy.
Oh, that's Bailey. Actually, no, second. The first guy, he just blew away a fastball.
Yeah, the fastball, the fastball is the first guy faces a Met. He throws three fastballs, blows him away. We're like, oh, this guy's gonna be awesome.
But then he didn't locate a heater up like that for like 3 weeks. Right. So like, he's also not locating very well either. That's also my video. Even the separation's a little different, but the finish, everything's the same. So like,
right.
It literally is when he starts to go here and then he squeezes the glove, they're like, there it is. And they're just getting going. But I just think some guys are like, you could do this and it's 101. I can't hit it. Right. So like it's one of those things like even tipping his struggles are beyond.
That's I
what
think
he should be giving up tipping.
Do you think part of that is just because of, you know, we always talk about like pitch shape and movement or even like perceived movement. You know, some guys, it perceives like it rises. It doesn't actually because that's physically impossible. Is part of it too, his fastball is so straight that if he's tipping and he's really just like a fastball slider guy 95% of the time, it's that much easier to kind of hammer him if you know what's coming.
Yeah. Yeah, and also the locating of these pitches that were tipped, like the ones to Albies, they were just misses. Like he was just down. Albies crushes down. If he stays up, he threw one pitch up, even semi up to Albies. He got big eyes and still missed it. He knew it was coming, and he was swung so hard he missed it still because it's just not where his bat goes very well.
Yeah.
So like, but like then if we see Helsley's motion in September, he's just robotic. Like yeah, even see where his hands are separating, natural. They're different.
Yeah.
So he's like, he like knees his glove up.
That's
uncomfortable.
Completely different thing he's done before. Cause you know, look how much higher the glove is on the left. Maybe his knees touching his elbow, maybe where this one, his thigh is coming right up to that glove.
So he doesn't know how to separate his hands, I think, which I think he should just like, he should start here. And as he's coming up, like move them out again, like just move them up because it'll look different enough. I think what was happening was there was space and then he closed that space. But if you don't start with the space open, they can't do anything with it. And he throws so hard that if they're not certain, they're not going to be like, yeah, I have it. And if they don't have it, like even Ozuna in the second time was like, is he still doing it?
Right.
I think he is. Yep, like,
there it is.
That's no one's up there like, I know what's coming. They're like, I'm pretty sure.
Right.
But even if you accidentally do it, don't tip once, they're like, well, do I have, like, it's that simple.
You put doubt in their head.
Exactly. If you just,
because it is like, we're analyzing this zoomed in, slowed down to like the tiniest bit. These guys have to make split second decisions. So if they have to think about it for more than a second, that could have an impact, even if you are kind of still tipping.
Yeah, exactly.
And then, on Wednesday, this is, you know, comparing his fastball to slider. Again, you could see the light on his, like, his hand or his wrist. You could see a lot more of it on the fastball.
Look how high the glove is on the letters on the left.
And, the height of the glove.
So his glove's way higher. But again, you'd have to see him do that a bunch of times before you were like, that's what he does now. So it comes down to like, he's like, I'm throwing a fastball. And he's like, I'm throwing a slider. Like, and then you get a little bit tense. That's how it usually happens. You're in stressful situations. You're not thinking about it because you're focused on pitching.
So what do you
think? That one on the right does look better. That slider did. He didn't knee his glove.
Yeah, it wasn't. So. This one was one of the only good sliders I think he threw that day. A lot of the other ones were out of the zone. But
yeah,
I guess he's clearly trying something. Hefner's working with him. They're probably working on this literally all of the time. What else, I guess, does he have to do? Because he keeps trying. It just seems like the results are not changing because clearly he's, even with a completely different, you know, placement of the glove and motion, he's still tipping just in a new way.
Or he could be, if they pick this up. It's also sucks that maybe sometimes you just get lit up. Mm. You just didn't have good stuff and it just so happens you did it when you changed the tip. And that just could throw you off. There's a lot of bad luck in here as well. Like balls that, if they're caught, it's different. That Michael Harris double could have been, it was kind of close to being caught. If it were caught, maybe we're like, oh, we're not so worried about it. I think the next step, I always tried to take it back to the basics and just be like, what can I do? What is one thing that I have full control over right now? and his default pitches, his slider is his best pitch, his four-seam fastball up, top of the zone, like top rail of zone. If he just peppers that, they know it's coming. It does not matter. It's very hard to hit that pitch. And that is what he does. He's not locating that. He's not locating the slider either. If he locates his fastball at the top of the zone, the top rail, and touches that and gets ahead that way, his slider can be not as good and still be effective. So I would say these are the two spots I hit. I aim for up middle and I aim for down middle. And all I care about is hitting those spots effectively right now. Because we have time. He's not going to be put in leverage situations very much. We have a month.
Right.
You know? So like you're three outings away from being like, oh, I can do this. And I've had a couple good outings in a row. Now let's start to get a little bit more granular like we did before.
Do you think they stick with this lower hand placement, or is there, would you have any thought in going back to what he's more comfortable with and just working on the way he's like gripping the ball?
I think there's a variation where you can eliminate the space between your hands and not, or maybe just start there. And then at a certain point you have to get your hands back to a comfortable spot. Mm-hmm. So that's the problem. It looks like he doesn't know where to go from here to get to where the separation is normally. So if he just commits to being like, boom, I come up and then I go right back to where I was. Like, then maybe that creates enough noise, or at least starts everyone who's looking for a tip back at zero enough to where he can get comfortable before there's a tip that he can find. That's probably his best option. And he's been so good for so long
that
he's adjusted before. I think that he can't. We're against the clock now. So yeah, I get it.
We're in that, you know, that snowballing thing we were talking about right now, where it's clearly in his head. How could it not be? And he's focused on, like, the Mets, they need him. You know, if they want to go as far as they think they can go, he's going to have to be a part of that. I think that was the plan at the deadline. So you just hope that he figures it out. And, you know, one last thing on this is, you know, why do you think it just happened to be caught the second he got traded to the Mets, or, you know, maybe three outings into switching teams? You know, he's basically been the same pitcher in terms of stuff, and his fastball getting hit a little bit more this year and location as he's been all year. So what is it, just like happenstance, or, you know, what do you think happened with that?
Maybe it's that microscope that comes along with New York, mm-hmm. and maybe it's going to a good team. Maybe it's who they were playing. Maybe it's having to go play the Brewers, who probably already had it too, and he was struggling against them, but no one else had it, right? Like, maybe it's just that kind of timing,
right?
That could have been it. It's hard to say. It could be a combination of all those things, but sometimes, like, people just see you a lot more because you're on TV more, or like they're always talking about you, your team, or whatever. Mm-hmm. And guys are just thinking about you more, and they look at it like, you know, you're losing to you're playing the Cards and you're losing to the Cardinals. You're like, well, here comes Helsley, we lose. But now it's like, you know, he's coming in the eighth inning. It's just a different dynamic. And maybe there's something else you can see there. So it sometimes is that simple. You can get into this like monotony of like, you see bad teams with closers who convert every time. Mm-hmm. Right. But like the team doesn't win very much. I was on one of those teams. I did it my last year. Because the teams are like, what, they're not out there like, we have to beat this team. They're like, that happens. That's different, a real thing. Level of
energy and competition.
Different level of energy in the games you're pitching in. And it could be really little. It could be 2% less, but that could be the difference between having a three and giving up those two or three homers that you avoided before.
Yeah. It's a game of, you know, crazy. People say football is a game of inches. Baseball is like a game of millimeters sometimes, or mental hurdles.
Especially when you're a reliever. Yep.
Yeah, it's a tough job, man. You would know. Before we jump on out of here, just, you know, final, what's your prediction for the Mets? How do you think their season ends here, and how far do you think they can go?
I think it's entirely within the realm of possibility. I think they have a team that, if, because it does come down to who's hottest, right? Who's dialed in. Yeah. If the Mets are dialed in, there's not a team that can fend them off. I would say like last year, like the Dodgers seemed very inevitable. They really did. As soon as they took the Mets on too, and you saw that it was a little bit of a, you're like, the Mets are playing really well, but the Dodgers are just like, I don't know what
different levels here.
It was just different levels at that point. They had everyone and they're everyone healthy and like they're super team. So I don't think that about the Dodgers this year. And I think the Mets have all the potential in the world to be just as good or better than they were last year. It just, you just have to have people that are stepped up, dialed in at the right time. And the young guys, I'm not saying they need to be, but if they do, and they like, it seems to be, they're just built for this. That's all it really need. You really need, if you have a McLean, I keep saying McLean, and McLean, and then like Manaea just kind of turns it on a little bit and gets a little bit more dialed in, and David Peterson throws well. You got your three starters. Suddenly you're like, oh wow, we're playing great because the offense is there. So I think they can go. I think they can make a run at the whole thing, but it's just going to be all about getting just a few more pitchers dialed in, feeling very confident going to the playoffs. But do I think that, is there going to be a big shift in the seating and stuff? Most likely not. They're probably going to have to take on, who would it be at this point?
Right now, I think it would be the Phillies. If the Mets finishes the six and the Phillies finish the three.
100%. They could beat the Phillies.
Is that a thing too, before we get out of here, the mental hurdle of one team beating the crap out of another? Because some seasons we see that and then the playoffs happen and it completely flips. And then other times, like with the Twins and the Yankees, or right now with the Mets and the Phillies, it does seem like it matters.
Yeah, it's the playoffs are just, it's a coin flip, man. It's a day to day. It's crazy. It's crazy. It's like, who has the most energy, really, is what it comes down to. And that's how those things can flip big time. But like, I'm just on paper. With no Zach Wheeler, like Zach Wheeler's a different, like he's the game one guy. They don't have him now. I mean, I know Christopher Sanchez is likely, but he's a two pitch guy, and it's the playoffs. Things change in the playoffs. Guys get, they try to take away your pitch.
Now
everyone steps up a little bit, and if you don't have five good pitches, it's tough to be a good starting pitcher in the playoffs. I think that's entirely within the realm of possibility. Yes, that is absolutely a thing. We see that a lot too in the NL East.
The Braves, the Braves and the Mets, or the Phillies,
like the team that was lower seeded the whole time.
The Marlins, for some
reason, just gets run over in the playoffs. But like, it's hilarious that there's so many division leaders, and then the number two team lining up, because the Mariners are lining up to play the Astros, and the Yankees are lined up to play the Red Sox, and the I want these teams to play each other, but just maybe not in the wild card round. It'd be cool to see them all in the DS.
Yeah. Well, it used to be that way when it was just the one wild card team. You actually weren't like allowed to face it, but I guess with the seeding now, it'd be kind of hard to do it because some teams get buys, some teams don't. So yeah, it'd be interesting to see how they could maneuver that.
Wild card viewership has been pretty insane for the 2 years they've done this.
Yeah. They're not taking anything away at this point. Yeah. They're only going to add. But Trevor, before we get on out of here, where can the people find you?
Trevor May Baseball on YouTube is where I am at vast majority of the time. That is where my live show Mayday is every Wednesday. I do an hour on Foul Territory, Foul Territory Network. And then the second hour is at 1 p.m. Pacific time is over on my channel. It's fun. It's a stream. We do lots of breakdowns and stuff. And then I have videos coming out all the time, and you can find me on pretty much every other podcast about baseball at some point that exists. So, I'm sure I will sneak into something that you're listening to at some point once again. And I apologize for that.
Trevor, great stuff. Thank you so much for joining. Everybody else will be back on Monday. Let's go Mets, and have a good week. Thanks for listening to this unlocked episode of the Just Mets podcast. If you liked what you heard and want access to full weekly episodes and additional bonus content, you can become a supporter of Just Mets on patreon.com/justmets or on justmets.net.